All right, time for the 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Jeff, the story of the day, Georgia has brought in a new assistant coach on offense, Todd Monken, but wait, there's more. He's the new offensive coordinator replacing James Coley, who is still on the staff. So with Todd Monken, what are your thoughts on him?
I think the big picture with Kirby, and Chris, you said this last hour, the offense, and there were a lot of reasons for it, attrition, injury. It didn't perform to the level, I think, that everybody expected and that everybody hoped. Coaches, players, fans, you name it. And so Georgia just needed to do a little fine-tuning, and this is obviously somebody he had his eye on. I kind of went back and studied up on some things, and they did not have a good year in Cleveland. I know that's a big news flash there, but the year before, I looked in his Tampa Bay teams where he was the OC. They scored at least 26 points. If I looked it up today, I'll pull it up again, but I think in 11 or 12 of their 16 games. And so they put up good numbers. He was Brandon Wheaton's quarterback's coach, who was a very good player in college. I think that's even beyond the play calling. I think just having a quarterback's coach is big. And Georgia just needs to get back to getting an identity and find something we're good at. And again, the injuries were just brutal, so it was hard. We didn't have those receivers who could create separation, so we really had a hard time establishing the dominant run game, which is what we want to do. And then because of the injuries, we had a hard time getting the separation and getting a lot consistently, getting the passing game in sync. And man, how many times we went through the numbers after the SEC title game, and you went through the numbers of the fourth quarter of the win over Auburn. Good gosh, it just seemed like we were second and eight and third and seven just all the time. So, again, the program is in such phenomenal shape. Kirby's done such a great job. And I do admire the fact that it would have been easy to stand pat to say, hey, no way, man. Hey, we just rolled Florida, Auburn, and Tech again. We
just finished number four, right?
That's right. I'm not doing anything. But, no, he recognized it. Again, that this is not – you don't need to trade in and get a new car. Just need a little tune-up there. So, we'll see how it plays out. Matt Luke is the hire I was most excited about, though, because he's an excellent line coach. The recommendations of Hugh Nall and David Andrews, and also it came within 48 hours after Sam Pittman said that he was going, which I think really stunned everybody. So then you were talking about, when you go back to when Kirby put that first staff together, Mel Tucker and Sam Pittman were the big, home run stars, and you had obviously Jim Chaney, and then you bring in Jay Johnson that next year. You got Kevin Butler's the student kicking coach, and you just think about just all that came together during that time, and now it's like, boy, a lot of these guys are gone, so you have to retool. Excuse me. And I know that's a tough thing for a young head coach, because I think any head coach, when you get that first opportunity and you've been chomping at the bit, I'm sure Kirby had in his mind, like, okay, let's say he's 2-3 years out from the Georgia job. He probably had a good idea of what kind of staff he'd like to assemble. And then you get closer, it's like, okay, I think I can get this guy, I think I can get that guy. And so you've had that first staff mapped out for a while probably. But then when you had the great success that Georgia's had under Kirby's watch, some of those guys start to move on. So sometimes it's that next hire that could be just as important.
Well, I like the first staff because he's a first-time head coach, and you bring in a guy with experience like Mel,
yep,
who had even been an interim head coach briefly for the Jaguars, an NFL DC. You knew Chaney's pedigree going all the way back to working for Joe Tiller at Purdue and Drew Brees. They move on, and he promotes a young up-and-coming coach in Dan Lanning and another one in James Coley, although Coley had more experience as an offensive coordinator at previous stops. So it's interesting now, things with Coley didn't work out last year. He goes back to a more veteran guy on offense and Todd Monken, who's been an OC, for two stops now the last 4 years in the NFL, was a head coach in his own right at Southern Miss for three seasons, and then before that even at Oklahoma State. But I wonder, Kirby probably does need to continue to sort of have a sense of maybe a short list of candidates, because I would have to think Matt Luke, who's been a head coach in the SEC, is not thinking he wants to just be an offensive line coach at Georgia for a really long time.
Granted, he's getting paid a boatload of money.
He is making a boatload of money. And then I don't know what, you know, Todd Monken either. It's like he's been in the NFL now for the last 4 years. He's been a head coach before. I mean, is he just looking to be the OC here for a long period of time too?
Well, and certainly, you know, when you look at Kirby's former boss, he was the king of staff turnover.
Right.
And now he was able to constantly replenish guys. So I'm sure there's always a list. And you've probably got a one, you probably got a two, and you probably got a three on those lists there. And, you know, I guess nowadays you feel like if you told him, like, okay, you'll have Monken and Luke for 2 years at this point, like, oh, okay, yeah, that's good. But, I mean, I definitely think Matt Luke, who did, in my opinion, he did a good job at Ole Miss. He was dealt a horrible hand there. And, well, he really replenished the talent. And we all know what happened in the Egg Bowl. And just a tremendous offensive line coach. So I thought that was just a huge pickup there. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Todd Monken. I think, again, the big deal there is just getting that quarterbacks coach. Because there were some games, and listen, the OC, good gosh, he's the first play that goes wrong.
Boo.
Yeah, you're going to start criticizing.
First three and out.
There were some games. I mean, I think about like the Texas A&M game. I thought James Coley called a great first half. We just didn't execute. I mean, we should have been up like 27-3 at halftime, and it was 13-3. I mean, the plays were great. Georgia just didn't execute them. And, you know, I thought in the Sugar Bowl, and I'm sure Matt Luke had some influence on it, like the flea flicker to bring in Swift, that was a great call. You know, Georgia, every play's designed to work. But, again, big picture, Georgia didn't use the middle of the field offensively in the passing game. I don't think we ran outside enough. There were too many times when you just felt – I'm going to quote my buddy David Dukes here. He was talking about when he played for Coach Henderson. Coach said, you got to just stay out of the wide. And it was just one of those deals, as we talked so many times, like, well, you got five 300-pound offensive linemen. You got three 300-pound defensive linemen. You know, you got 245-pound tight ends and linebackers, and everybody's just slamming right in there into the middle. There's just no space. You
right.
might could get a little push and get a couple of yards, but – There's just no room.
No, it's just a bunch of big bodies.
To get anything done. And that was kind of a deal with me. And again, when you started going into some of those numbers that you find better than anybody, that just, and you know, good gosh, we're 3rd and 8. We're 2nd and 9. And then, you know, I went back through the SEC championship game of our 27 first down plays. 19 of them were 2nd and 8 or worse. So that's the part of it, too, where, again, like we say, just fine-tuning. And, again, I understand. We got killed by attrition. I mean, when you're talking about losing Mecole Hardman, Riley Ridley, Isaac Knout, Elijah Holyfield, and the guys that graduated, like Terry Godwin, I mean, that was a lot to replace. And then you had the injuries on top of it. You had what happened with J.J. Holloman. And then, you know, Cager gets hurt. You know, if you want to sit there and say perfect world, just straight football – If the Holloman deal, you know, if he's on the team, if Cager doesn't get hurt, you know, if Pickens and Blaylock aren't hurt, or, you know, Pickens got suspended for the first half of the SEC title game, then all of a sudden you're looking at it and say, well, that's actually, you know, it's not as good. There's not a Mecole out there. That's still a really good receivers core. Then, my goodness, by the time all the injuries set in, we're out there with like our number 7, 8, and 9 guys against the LSU Tigers. You're just overmatched.
Yeah, by the end of that game, until Pickens arrived in the second half,
yeah,
you
we
think
just,
I mean, the guys that were receiving, we had Kyaris Jackson, Matt Landers, who else was out
yeah,
there?
I mean, like Tommy
after
Bush got in there, and you know, he just had barely played. It's not knocking him, but
no, but they hadn't really played all year.
No,
so.
Guys, you are what your record said. No, guys are where they are on the depth chart, and that's not to say that somebody can't break out and have a good game, or maybe somebody's a gamer, they come out and make a push in the spring. But that was just the position where we just did not match up. And then with that, I think Notre Dame really gave the blueprint, and that they were kind of daring us to create the separation. I remember the first series, it looked like Swift was going to have a run. And Notre Dame's got a terrific team, terrific defense. And they came up and had a guy made a one-on-one tackle against Swift. And then you kept looking, and you're thinking, my gosh, they got at least 10 guys within 8 to 10 yards of the line of scrimmage every play.
Yeah, it was the part about where the safeties really didn't have to worry about going and helping in coverage because our receivers couldn't beat the corners one-on-one.
Finally, Cager got down that left side for the big play and then the touchdown that put us up 20-10, and that kind of set the blueprint. So, listen, Georgia's going to still come out and run the ball, and that's Georgia football. That's what Kirby wants to do. But we've definitely just got to get the passing game, like we said, just fine-tune it. There doesn't need to be any radical overhauls here or anything. But you every coach, every team, everywhere, you know, listen, LSU just won the national title. Clemson just played for it again. You're going to evolve. Whoever wins the Super Bowl, there'll be something new that you try and throw in there. I mean, because everybody's always gaining on you. So I'm like you, Chris. I think the big thing is, and, you know, only time will tell how it turns out, but that we didn't just stand pat, because there was no way getting around, like, the offense, even with the injuries and the attrition. I mean, I didn't think the line performed up to expectations.
No, it was definitely – it was underwhelming this season.
And then there were things, like, I mean, like, Charlie Werner's been a great player, and, you know, it takes till the Tech game before he catches a touchdown. And, you know, you think about the big plays, Wolf. It's like every time we threw to the tight end, it seemed like something good happened.
Yeah, I mean, especially,
am I right on that?
Well, yeah, especially the catch Wolf made. That might be
the
catch of the year in the Florida game. Well, so next year, like, what is – because now you do. You have a new offensive coordinator,
new
quarterback,
line,
possibly four-fifths of your offensive line are new. So, I mean, what's a reasonable expectation for how Georgia's offense should perform next year?
And that's the other part is, you know, you think – and we won these games, thank goodness, and I'm so grateful. But in the end, there are two ways to look at it. Like, oh, my gosh, we're losing all these guys. We're losing Jake and Thomas and Swift and Wilson and Cager and Charlie Werner. And, you know, so and boy, we struggled scoring with all those guys. So the other way is like, well, you know, we won all these games. It's great. We only scored 24 against Florida. We got 21 against Auburn. We got 19 against Texas A&M. It's not like we were scoring 38 and 45. Can we at least match that? Can we do better than that? Can you do better than that despite all that Georgia lost, with the caveat there be not turning the football over?
Right, that's the key. But, yeah, when you think even Notre Dame was 23, the loss to South Carolina. We probably
Vandy
averaged, what, like three touchdowns a game?
Time. Well, let's go through. We'll do the
– of the big game. You know, out, like, the noise from Arkansas State and Monroe and even Tech.
Okay. So after Vandy, Murray State, and Arkansas State and going into Tech.
Yeah.
All right. 23 against Notre Dame, 43 against Tennessee.
All right.
17 against the Cox.
43 with a defensive score there.
Right.
All right.
21 against Big Blue.
Yep.
24 against the Mighties.
Yep.
27 against Missouri? Is that right?
That's
27?
Yeah.
Nothing? Okay.
That sounds right.
21 against the Barn. 19 against A&M. That should be 7 games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games. Yeah, that's right. That's 8 games. So that's, because basically the four worst teams Georgia played, was the first three games and the last game of the regular season.
Right.
Not LSU or Baylor. Oh, and then, you know, you're going to throw in there too. Yeah, we scored 10 against LSU and 26 against Baylor.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll throw in the 30 against Vandy. They're in the SEC.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's even thinking about the Sugar Bowl, thinking about even that first game against Vandy, and even, say, the Auburn game, mm-hmm. where Georgia had, like, those couple of drives right there at the end of the half that netted points. Like, Georgia, it was a lot of times when Georgia scored, it was just all of a sudden this one little chunk of the game where things came together, and then Georgia wasn't doing anything the rest of the time. Like the first couple drives at Vandy, and then it was pretty much shut down.
Oh, yeah, we scored our first three possessions. So if you want to go like this, from Notre Dame through A&M, we averaged 24 points a game.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it unreasonable? I mean, what could Georgia do better than that next season? New OC? You know, there's a new quarterback who should at least, I mean, be pretty good. Georgia's offense shouldn't stink with him, but we are losing. He's got to replace potentially a first-round NFL draft pick in Fromm. We'll see.
Yeah.
Not to mention
Swift, Thomas.
Yeah, who are going to be first-rounders.
I mean,
then
could
Wilson.
Could it be comparable? I mean, you would hope.
I mean, well, it can't be worse. What I mean by it can't be worse is Georgia can't afford for it to be worse.
No,
it could be worse. I mean, though.
Things can always be worse. Yeah,
but Georgia can't afford for it to be. But
here's the thing, and I get the personnel Georgia's losing, but with what Matt Luke's, and again, I'm not knocking Sam Pittman. There's just somewhere that there are different methods, and sometimes you need a fresh voice in there. You know, can Georgia's run blocking be better despite all that Georgia lost? Maybe.
Well, and particularly, too, it's the – because even it's really the last 2 years, the short yardage.
Yeah, we just
– are running on the inability to get a yard on third down or fourth down when the defense knows that's probably what you're going to try and do.
Right.
But, like, if when you've got the line we had and the backs we had, it shouldn't matter if the defense knows what's coming.
Well, I never will forget something John Madden once said. Boom! No, something else he once said. He said
something on that video game.
A good football team. Here we go. When you got to run and the other team knows you got to run and you can still run, that's a good football team. Amen to that. And let me tell you something, fellas. The key to happiness in life, throw when you want to, not when you have to.
I like throwing on first down more.
If it's there. The problem with throwing on first down, if you go incomplete.
Yeah. Then you throw again on second down.
Oh, no. Then you get the – well, we got – then you get the dreaded – that's a book, handoff up the middle for 2 yards, then your third
down. Well, yeah, that's why you throw again on second
then
down.
Next then next second, oh, we're through the clock.
Then you got a punt, we got a good defense.
That's
– actually, don't punt. Just throw again on fourth down.
We've gone 0 for 4. Oh, my gosh. The there'll just be some other things like – to me, and I don't know how much it was just Jake not wanting to do it, you know, whether he was told, who knows, who knows. But there were times when we're running, you know, whether you want to call it the read option, the RPO, when we're snapping it to Jake and he's sitting there, you know, trying to read whether to hand it off, when he was not a threat to keep it. And Jake can run.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and you're also, that's a waste of time. So
yeah, setting that up.
Yeah, so you're giving those unaccounted for defenders, and I don't care how good you're blocking, when you got all 11.
But they're coming after the running back.
Yes. I mean, it's.
Because they probably had a good idea, like, this team doesn't want to get its starting quarterback injured.
And that also gets you to, I think, the number that kind of stands out to me, not counting Arkansas State and Murray State, the longest touchdown run by back we had all year was that 38-yarder that Swift had against Kentucky. So that was one, too. It's like we just didn't even have those big. Now, he had some long runs, but, you know, there wasn't that.
There was no explosiveness anywhere.
And, again, just a lot of that was just, it just comes down to numbers. So you get into it, too. Now, if you're talking about getting the quarterback, whether it's Newman, Mathis, Beck, Bennett, whoever, getting them more involved in that run game, and certainly Newman figures to be the starter, so let's just call it like it is there. Do you want to play the running game 11 against 11 or 10 against 11?
11 on 11.
Yes. This one goes to 11.
Yes.
And then in the passing game, it's the same because if the play breaks down, are you a threat to run? Because let's look, whether you're watching college, NFL, whatever it may be, how about this difference? A quarterback's rolling out. There's nothing there. And sometimes even for a quarterback who's a great runner, this is the only play to do. I'm outside the tackle box. I'm just going to flip the thing out of bounds. Third and 10 now. Or there's nothing there. I could scamper here. Maybe at least get 2 or 3.
That's what Burrow was doing.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, moving on to the 5-5. So James Coley's role now. So is Monken going to be the quarterback's coach too? Is that what Coley's going to handle?
He's the
assistant head coach.
I've got to think Monken's going to be the quarterback's coach, too. Because that was the thing, too. And I love Jake. And look, I'm his biggest fan. I know you're his biggest fan. But there were times, too, the mechanics weren't there. He wasn't stepping into his throws. He was going off the back foot some. He needs some, you know, so that position, even the best of the best. Now, some guys in golf, they always said Tiger was a swing geek. But, you know, even the best of the best.
You need somebody.
Yeah, just to help you.
Yeah.
Your footwork's a little sloppy here.
Yeah, if you just have some little bad habit that forms, you need somebody to point it out to you.
So I think, to me, that's – because like we say with play calling, every one of them's designed to work. There's some guys you like better, some guys you don't like as much, but I think just having that QB's coach is the most important thing. And I think the big – and, again, knowing with everything that hit Georgia with the attrition and all, I think kind of the biggest constant I saw in the big games where it probably just added to our angst, and it goes back to what was arguably the biggest win of the year, the win over Florida 24-17. We went 12 of 18 on third down. The fact that we – I mean, that's some magic. Like, to try and continue to replicate that, I mean, 18 third down plays, that's a big number right there.
It's huge, and it's you can get away with that against Grantham.
Of course, but, third and Grantham, but it's if you keep living like that. So that was a thing to me, and it just seemed, and again, maybe the numbers, you know, don't bear it out. And again, it was dramatic against LSU. LSU was great. They had a great day. We had a bad day. They got the bounces. We all know how that went. But I mean, when you're just sitting there, Chris, it just seemed to me, even when we're winning, I'm not complaining. The season was incredible. But even when we're winning, it just seemed like, oh, my God, we're second and eight. We're third and seven. It was just our backs were always against it. Even like the Missouri game, that first touchdown to Pickens was on a third and nine.
Yeah.
And we just seemed to constantly be behind the chains.
The season was great the way it turned out, and even that final stretch in November to think Georgia did not trail in any of those games.
Incredible.
But individually, each game was frustrating for and mostly it was because of the offense. So it was like a weird year, every game you felt more frustration. You didn't necessarily enjoy it. Then afterward, it's like, well, we won, and Georgia kept winning, and it was. In the aftermath, it was another terrific season, but it was definitely more frustrating than the previous two.
Well, it was, and I think, too, kind of the way it went with Notre Dame, we really should have won that game more than we did. Then against Tennessee, boys, a slow start. Then we got it rolling against Tennessee.
Yeah, we were behind early.
Yeah, and it's like, okay. Now finally, and then, good Lord, South Carolina happened, and then everything got tight. And I've still said, too, for Georgia's success, I'll go back to the elements against Kentucky and the way the team pulled together, I think was the best thing that happened to this team, and we had that incredible run. But like you said, I think after Notre Dame, it's like, well, boy, the defense is great, but there were some concerns there. Then against Tennessee, it's like, okay, we feel like we've got it rolling now.
All is well.
Well, and it wasn't. But now also Georgia was playing great defenses too. So there's a lot to it. It's like we said, this is just some fine-tuning and a really great job by the program of not just sticking with the status quo. Maybe next year's not as good, and maybe you fine-tune something else. But, you know, I think just standing pat, especially with everything Georgia's losing, would have been a big mistake.
Well, for this upcoming season, let's just be realistic. Georgia's highly likely to have a L very early in the season.
Sure, sure.
Third game of the year is at Alabama.
Heavy underdog there.
So,
yeah.
You know, you're going to basically then go the rest of the way with, you know, not really being able to lose again if the ultimate goal is to put yourself in position to be in the playoff, you know, which is where Georgia's been the last 3 years. But, you know, the Dogs have third game, 12 days at Alabama, and
new quarterback,
yeah.
New kicker.
I mean, Bama's going to be really good. Like, the thing, when you think about Mac Jones, go and look at his numbers against Auburn and Michigan. He threw the two pick sixes against Auburn, which is why they lost.
Good.
But
he's a good quarterback.
Yeah, like, no, they're going to be fine with him.
Sure.
They'll be fine.
And one of the pick sixes against Auburn was a fluke. It went right through a receiver's hands.
Yeah, and it was at the goal line.
Right.
Bama was about to score.
Yeah.
I
mean, that's so – yeah, Bama's going to be really, really, really good.
They'll be fine.
I think Georgia's going to have a terrific team next year. And that defense – now, here's an important thing, too. I'm going to throw this out there because there were people saying before, this will be the best offensive line Georgia's going to ever have. It's like, well, you need to let the season play out. I think the defense can take a lesson from what happened with the O-line. See, the O-line was good. But the defense, could this be the best Georgia? No. You still got to go out and prove it. So they don't need to spend too much time reading their accolades.
Right. Because the 17 defense is a big shoes to fill, just from a couple years ago, how good that D was. I don't even know if that's the best defense Georgia's ever had, but it's got to be up there, right?
It was up there. I mean, those in the 02, 03 – that was really good, but probably the best since here. Well, definitely, but since the early 80s, those were awesome defenses.
All right, the 5 at 5 brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.